Hi, Birgitta. Hi, Wyman.
Hi, Femke. Hi.
Good to have you on the call.
Yeah, nice to be here.
So I have just 1 hour today because, I'm mixed up with the time zones.
It's a good thing you reminded because I would have logged in at 9.
Yeah, it completely snuck up on me this time because March has come along so fast.
Mm.
So, but here we are. Do any of you have any questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have two coaches who's been referred to me because one of their outcomes is to be able to connect more with their team because what their manager have said is that they tend to work on their own. They're a good individual worker, but when it comes to team, they tend not to work with people. And so when I've been coaching them, both of them, they tend to think their feeling rather than feel their feeling.
Okay.
And one thing I notice is it's as if they're disassociated rather than associated with, say, context, especially in regards to emotions.
Okay.
So I was wondering, is there anything that I can do with them, a pattern or anything to really allow them to feel their feelings rather than just think their feelings?
Well, look, first, are they aware of this pattern?
Yes. Yeah. They okay. are. Now they are.
Yeah.
After the coaching sessions now, yes.
Of course, yes. And so do they want to change that?
Yes, because they both do want to connect with their teams, yes.
Okay, and is it that they don't feel like, what kind of emotions do they feel in their body and what emotions don't they feel?
I think they do talk about, I think it's more to do with the negative emotions and
right.
the permission that I talked about the permission.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them are aware about giving themselves permission. I also showed them the Susan David's TED talk about emotional agility.
Oh, you're dropping out, Wyman. I missed you for a second.
So I showed them the TED talk from Susan David about emotional agility.
Yeah.
They said that helped them understand more about emotions. So I don't know what else I can do now.
So what are the emotions that when they come up, they refuse to feel them?
I think the emotions come up, but they don't have fully permission to have it.
Mm-hmm. So that might be because of vulnerability.
Okay.
So they may not have permission to show it to others. So then you have to kind of.
Yes.
You know, keep it in because, and then it's a case of what is it that stops them from being able to show that? Or
yes.
I wonder also if they, it also has to do with awareness of what's going on in your body.
Okay.
In terms of sensations wise. So ask them, what are the sensations and how do you respond to that internally?
So, okay.
The tricky part is because and I had this discussion, I actually believe it was with Lenka yesterday, about disassociation.
Yes.
And that's really not a thing.
Like, no, you always associated something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is that, how would they call that state that they then are in? And so that's at a higher level. Let's say that it is, they feel sad, or they feel afraid. Let's pick afraid. And then they feel they don't have permission because they feel shame about that.
Yes.
About what other people are going to feel. But then they don't want to show that shame, or they don't want to feel that shame. And so then they numb that. They get into a state of numbness. And that's a lot of the time when you get answers like, I don't know. Like, what do you think about that? I don't know. Or what are you feeling right now? I don't know. So it's almost like an I don't know state. It's a numbing. Okay. Usually what I ask is, what is behind the I don't know?
Yes.
What is behind, how would you call this state? So that they actually realize that it's not something separate from them, but it's something that's going on in their body right now.
Okay. So is there something that I can get them to practice so that they can just allow themselves to feel sad and show it?
And the thing is, is it the sadness or is it the shame that they don't have permission for? You know, because, so I'm curious, does that have to do with how other people see them? Are they able to show sadness when they are by themselves?
Yes, they can show sadness by themselves.
Okay, so
but
this
not
has,
to others. Yes.
So this has something to do about their, my guess is that it has to do with vulnerability.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So do they have permission to feel vulnerable in, you know, in relation to others? Because what do they believe about others that makes it not okay to show sadness? And if you do the permission process, so I give myself permission to feel shame or to feel sad in front of others, because then objections are going to come up.
Yes.
And so you want to get to those objections, and also you want them to have like a strong experience of like, what are the sensations in my body? So that and this I think is really critical, like that they can witness these sensations without having to run away from it.
Okay. Yeah.
So then you first work with permission, and then you ask them like, what other, how can you texture this with what state, so that it is more okay to feel these sensations, because an emotion is just sensations in the body.
Yes. Yeah.
But they probably have less permission to express it for the expression of it than feeling itself.
That's it. Because the coach, he described that he went to a hospital to see his mother, and in the bed next to mum was a little boy who's only three, who had been abandoned by his parents. And he'd been in hospital for 2 years, and he said that he felt compassion for the child, but not enough for him to go and speak to the child. So he was saying, I don't know what's holding me back. I feel compassion, but not enough for me to go. So I think that everyone shows compassion. I think everyone is born with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have something happened for him to not show the compassion.
Yeah, so it's interesting. How does he relate internally to compassion when those feelings come up? Is he allowed to fully feel those feelings, or is there like a governor on it? And it might have to do with expressing emotion, and that's different from feeling the emotion. So, but you can still bring permission to that.
Okay.
So I give myself permission to tear up, or I give myself permission to act on my my feeling compassion, and then okay. notice how they respond.
Okay. Okay, I'll try that. So I'll work on the vulnerability first.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay, so Audrey and Lenka, for both of you as well, I have till 10 o'clock my time. So I have an hour today because I screwed up with the time zones. Gonna kind of caught up with me. So we'll have till another 50 minutes. So any questions that you have that you would like me to answer today? No? Any patterns that you would like to practice?
Hi, Funke.
Hi, Nenka.
I was muted and I was talking, so.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I didn't realize. Can I have a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, thank you. So yesterday you gave me advice about the client who's doing the dissociation.
Yeah.
And all the information you were just giving now was actually really helpful for me. Thank you. And so I asked her a couple of questions, how exactly she's doing the dissociation. It took us quite some time for her to actually be able to say these things because she's been doing it so much since childhood that it just is normal thing for her.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was really quite a difficult job to do. But eventually we came to that she actually leaves and she goes into like a space that's like the universe where there is nothing. There's this dark and she's there alone.
Okay.
And that way nothing can really touch her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, behind that was that she's afraid of conflict, and behind that is that she's afraid of feeling shame.
Okay. Nice job, Lenka.
Thank you. So now my question is like, how do you kind of move her from the universe, like if she stops being afraid of conflict, because we had to end the session, if she'll stop being afraid of the conflict and she will resolve this problem with the shame, will she be then able to move from her universe to her body? Or do I need to literally ask her, how do you think you can step into your body? Or
oh yeah, you can test that for sure. Absolutely. Like, so once you do like the, once you've grabbed hold of where the change power is, mm-hmm. you can even ask her that question and test it. So when you are comfortable or okay with feeling shame and feeling and being confronted, will that allow you to drop into your body? And then depending on her answer, yes or no, you know that you need to work on that with her or not. Or it might come up once you've done the work and she'll say like, oh, this is such a huge shift, but I still cannot get into my body. Then you can work on that as next step. But my guess is that she's not all the time out of her body. So it's just a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
So once that's no longer needed, that like just drops, that can drop away, but you still need to test it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, of course. Yeah, that's a good one. Right, great, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Audrey?
Hi, I just have a really quick business question.
Okay.
You mentioned that the way you charge your clients is by outcome.
Yes.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. I'm sort of confused by that, because what outcome are you saying that are you holding to? Sorry for the, oh my God.
I love that sound.
just lost my train of thought. What outcome are you, because it takes maybe a session or two sessions, right, to get to what the outcome is. And even that might shift a little bit. So what are you saying that you'll charge for? You know what I'm saying?
Right. So
measuring that.
Yeah, so for me, when I have a conversation, so I work only with coaches, and once they get confident with their coaching, they're able to charge more money for their services. They are able to, they feel more confident to do the coaching. So rather than not coaching at all or coaching for very little money, they feel free to kind of go out and get results. And so that confidence is going to have an effect on their business. It's going to have an effect on, like, maybe leaving the job that they've been in. So I've got like one really specific type of person that I work with. So I know what problem that I'm solving. Right now, I'm also adding in the business side of that as well, because I think that like is kind of like solves the problem more completely. So rather than saying, oh, you know, like we're going to have 8 sessions together. Oh, I can give you like a specific example. I'm working with a client who has, he's actually not a coach, but I'm doing one-on-one with him. And when we got on the call, when I do that introduction call, I don't go into too much detail. I really just focus on where are you now and where do you want to be? And what is the cost of where you are now? And what is the cost of where you want to be? And this person is in a job that has him that makes decent amount of money, but he's very far away from his family. And he wants to earn enough money and start his own business so that he can move back down out of Canada back into the US so that he can be close with his family and close with his grandchildren. So, and he wants to do that in the next 6 months, but something is stopping him because he has, since the last several decades, been very self-sabotaging. And so he never holds on to money very long. He doesn't take any action on making his dreams come true. And so he's just kind of been in this state for several years. So by actually showing him, this is where you're going to be, having enough money, and I believe it was like something like $5,000 a month, earning $5,000 a month from his own business so that he can move down and spend time with his family. So that, if you take that, the lifetime value of that shift, that is priceless, spending time with his money, spending time with his family. That's priceless. So of course I'm not going to charge some like $100,000, but it may actually very well be worth that once he has that outcome. So it needs to be feasible for someone to pay that. So, of course I have to think about, okay, what would that be? What do I feel comfortable with? And that's how I set my price. And so he mentioned, because I usually do 1 or 2 outcome setting sessions, and then I do 6 coaching sessions. And he mentioned, wow, that's a lot of money. But then in the conversation, I can say, so how much would this be worth to you if you could move back to where your family is, be close with your grandchildren, watch them grow up, and create financial freedom for yourself? How much would that be worth? And so then he was like, well, yeah, then you're not charging enough. And so he also started kind of like, oh, if I don't need as many sessions, am I going to have to pay the full price? And so I said, well, so if I do my job really, really well and you get your result in less time, is it worth less? And he was like, well, no, fair enough. And so he agreed on the price and we got to move forward.
So I perfectly understand the value proposition that you're presenting. What I'm not understanding is, at what point do you set the outcome? And because that sometimes shifts, do you shift along with that? And, you know, like, I think you define outcome too at a certain point, but are you saying that you're going to coach people indefinitely until they get a new job or until their attitude shifts? Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it can become a little bit of a moving target, even in the coaching sessions that we have here practicing, because it's like, you start up with one outcome, right? And through the coaching, you find out, okay, that's not a strong enough leverage point. We need to get to this leverage point. So which is the piece of it that you are saying, okay, we're done?
So yeah, like, and here's the thing too. I mean, it also depends, of course, on how dedicated your client is to getting the outcome. Right. Part of that is helping them be really motivated. Part of that is also choosing who you work with, and setting really strong boundaries on that. Like, if you notice that someone's not really into it, that is going to have also an effect on whether you're going to get them the outcome, because if they're not going to put all the effort in. So here's the way that I set it. And that's based, of course, also on my experience. I know that I can get someone results usually after four sessions in a coaching program, and definitely by six sessions, they'll have made the shift. I focus on the mindset shift, not on them getting the actual results. So, because those are effects that they want. And you cannot coach on effects, because there's all like other influences that come into play with that. So this client that that I've been working with, his thing is that his test of outcome is if he can take action on his outcomes, on his goals, on his overall goals, and he knows exactly what those are. If he actually takes action on a daily basis, rather than instead watching TV and doing nothing or avoiding it altogether, if he can do that, that means that he's reached his outcome. Before I set that kind of like a really, how do you say that, specific outcome, when I do my introduction session, it's much more on a higher level, and then we break it down. But you, like, the way that I do my introductory sessions, it's almost like a first coaching session, except for the fact that I don't actually do any detection and analysis. I just focus on present state, desired state, why and why not. And that's, and by them seeing what effect the shift is going to have, that's what is worth it. So that's what I like lay my price against. And then it's an investment rather than a cost, because the cost is really where they're at right now.
Got it. So even if we weren't, how much horsepower does this thing? Even if we weren't charging in that way, it's actually a good tactic to do the first session and not do so much detection and analysis, but focus on present, future, why not, and what is the cost of each, so that they can see. So you can find out what the leverage point is, and they can see what the value will be.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So with this person that I'm coaching now, his introduction session was very long, and I noticed already, like, okay, I need to start interrupting, and so I also, in addition to getting the why and the why not and where he wants to be, I also need to set very strong boundaries and test to see if he is a good fit to work with. So I need to test, can I interrupt him? Is he okay with that? Is he coachable? Because he was talking so much in that first session, and that's his style, to like talk a lot. And we discovered also that that's one of the things that he needs to work on rather than being in his head, is to move from moving from reflective to active. So, but I need to test that. Is he actually coachable? Can I interrupt him? Is he willing to take directions? Those kinds of things. And that makes your success as a coach, or your chances of success as a coach, a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah. I was just curious how you defined all of that. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions? Birgitta?
Can I just give a comment? Because I was listening to Weimann talking about persons disconnected from their feelings, because I have had this other client, the depressed girl, and I have made now the old sessions in the metacognitive therapy for anxiety and depression with her. Mm-hmm. It was a recipe by Adrian Wallace. Well, I don't remember exactly his name. But anyway, there, because what she had to learn, that was not, because her feelings is also always about herself. Mm-hmm. She's feeling sad and depressed and so on. And that was, okay, I have an emotion, or I have a feeling, but I don't have to act on it. I can be real anyway. So before I had the last session with her, we did the power zones pattern. And that really helped when she understood that she owned her emotions.
Right, yeah.
So she said that last time then, okay, now I understand that. So that was really a breakthrough for her.
Nice.
So now we are going to go on to other things to get her a new job and so on, and not, because I think it's, so she has learned to postpone when she's thinking all the thoughts all over again, over again, over again, it's leading nowhere. She just becomes more and more sad. And also to know that she does not have to act on her feelings, and she can even choose to have other feelings or emotions.
Right, yeah.
That has taken 9 sessions.
Yeah.
So, but that was a lot. He gave, in the book, there was a lot of different things they should practice to do other ways. So she has done all these things.
Okay, very good. Yeah. And you know, and the power zone is so powerful.
Yeah.
To use that word. Yeah, it really does make a difference. But then you need to know what to do with your powers.
Yeah.
How to use them, you know, like how to use metta yes and metta no, and how to welcome in emotions or sensations in the body, you know, knowing that you are the meaning maker, and so you can just witness it. It doesn't have to mean anything. So that's where like a lot of the power lies, and then giving it new meanings that that are more resourceful.
Yeah. So that was just because I remember I told you when I started to work after this book with her, because the metacognitive therapy for anxiety and depression, and I was just followed the description that he was giving in the book then.
Nice, yeah. And my guess is that once now, here's the thing too. You know, like when we, and this is something that I am quite passionate about. If you choose a niche, Birgitta, work with one type of person, you can take it down from 9 sessions to, you know, like, and cut that in half to 5-6 sessions very easily and much faster, because you start to understand the structure of how we create certain problems. And a lot of the time, even though the content itself is a little bit different, but if we solve one problem for one type of person, that problem is going to, the structure of that problem is going to be the same for most people who have that problem.
Yeah.
And the content, they might say like some little different things to themselves, but you know, if a person struggles from perfectionism, most of the time it's all or nothing thinking and confusing human being with human doing.
Yeah.
So you can start listening for that. So that 9 sessions for now, like you know, like if you, let's say that you were to work with others who struggle with this, it's going to be much easier the next time.
Yeah, because, and that was also because I followed like the recipe in the book. He said first session, second session, and so on.
Okay.
And the power zones I put in, I changed, and then in the 8th session, I understood like, okay, here the power zones would help better than his recipe.
Right.
So it was, I think it was just because I followed his, you know, what he has said I should do.
Exactly, yeah.
But this was just like a test. And she knew this is, now we test this, we see how it works.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
So, yeah. But it was just to not, you don't always have to act on your emotions.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, and that's a big thing as well for people to have that experience.
Because she had the first, she believed that if they did not act on her emotions, she was not authentic.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that was like the most important thing in her life.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. That's a good distinction.
Yes, like in all artists, you know, Munch and all the famous painters, that they were depressed and painted when they were depressed.
Yeah.
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 So she compared herself to those persons.
Was it almost like glorifying?
Yeah, because it was like kind of nice to feel sorry for oneself and to be unhappy. And
so did you do any like focus on the big why and the big why not?
The big why, also for her it is to be real, you know, to be ekte in Norwegian, to be authentic, and she's very creative, and she has a creative soul, and that for her that it belongs, you know, to really feel her emotions and let them control her in a way, because that is real.
But I mean the big why for changing it.
Yeah, the big why for, because that on the meta level, we asked them, okay, has this ever, now you have been doing this for many, many years, has it helped? Has it anything become better? No, nothing became better. But she felt quite real then.
Right.
But she has been very much sad in her life, you know, thinking over things that were not worth to think over, and you know, getting in a negative spiral.
Mm-hmm. And then feeling sorry for herself.
Yeah,
about that.
Then feeling sorry for herself and seeing that she has no future, and so on.
What's interesting with that also, Birgitta, and I think also for the others, when you notice that someone is making like a complex equivalent, so what that means is like to be creative, I have to be depressed.
Yeah.
You know, so you link creativity with depression.
Mm. Great artists are depressed.
Great artists are, yes, exactly. So you're linking two things together that don't really belong together, or that are not necessarily linked except for in your mind. So then what helps is that you can ask, so what if you could be super creative as creative and authentic as you want to be mm-hmm. and feel really good yeah. and happy and alive. Mm-hmm. What if you could have that? So mm-hmm. that you kind of create a synergy rather than polar, than them being polar opposites. Mm-hmm. You need to help your client to see the possibility of having those both at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's how you can kind of like wake someone up to new possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she last time we talked, she really was thinking about her future and new possibilities. And when we're talking about, because she doesn't like her job very much. And I said, perhaps it's time to see what kind of job you want and according to your values and so on.
Right.
Oh, I really would like to do that, she said.
Oh, good. Good.
So, because now she has had a job for 1.5 years. She has not had that before. So now she has some experience, knows what she likes and doesn't like and so on. Because it was hard to coach her when she had no experience, just came straight from school. And she left school because of depression.
Right, yeah.
But I don't think she's depressed anymore. It's just that something that she hides behind.
Yeah, you know, like I think it's a real blessing because she could have gone on like this for decades.
Yes, and you know, because I think really it's an excuse for her.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. I mean,
so we will see now when we start with talking about new job and really going for something that she likes better.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was just to report that something happens in my life as well.
Very nice. I like
my coaching.
Very cool.
Can I ask a question about the client?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So once you've gotten her to the point where she has this great realization and leverage point about depression, and maybe she has some understanding about her own the complex equivalent that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. How do you get her to the place where she no longer thinks that way? Because it feels like, in a lot of these cases, probably the awareness or the realization is powerful enough to bring them out of that. Mm-hmm. But what if it's not? Like, where would you take them in that process?
Yeah, I would say most of the time the awareness is not enough. Mm-hmm. Because the habit of like a certain style of thinking, like the victim type thinking or the all or nothing or pessimistic thinking is like we've got very strong neural pathways for that. So the way that I would do that is I would have them, like what Birgitta did, experience the power zone. And I would have them like work with, saying no to the thoughts that come up that feed that state of depression. Mm-hmm. So the ownership and the no, and then I'd have them practice it every day. And I would check in with them. Like, are they actually doing that? So with this one client that I have, we did the self-esteeming process. And then he sent me an email and he's saying like, you know, I get really great insights and experiences and I really feel the shift during the coaching calls. But then, you know, like a couple days later, I've lost that feeling. And so I asked him, well, like, are you doing what we had discussed? Because he said, well, there must be something else that I'm not, you know, that I'm not that I'm not aware of. And so he kept on thinking like there must be like a higher insight or something like that, but he was not repeating that process of the self-esteem. And which was interesting because that gave him such a huge shift. And I, like a lot of clients, when they come to you, they think, oh, now I have an insight. Now I don't have to work for it anymore. And I think the opposite is quite true, is that you do need to create new neural pathways. And that means practicing that new state and saying no to the old thoughts when they creep up because it's so habitual, or the old pictures, so that it starts to loosen its grip and you can choose, and you can choose actively something else. So I would, in addition to the awareness, I would definitely have them do that on a daily basis.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions?
Yeah, about the parasol. So if you actually give them to practice just the meta, to keep saying the meta no, don't you need to add some kind of like meta yes as well, like what do you want to feel instead? Is it enough if you just do the meta no?
Sometimes it is, and it's good for people to have awareness of what they want to say yes to, of course, definitely. But sometimes it's just a case of just saying no. I remember, way back when I was an assistant in the NLP training, and I had to listen in, and I had such high anxiety. And I don't even know what I was saying to myself anymore, but my mentor at the time, who was running the NLP training, he said, okay, like, what is it that you're saying to yourself? And I don't know, it was some kind of like negative self-talk. And then he asked me, like, okay, I've got a sandwich right in front of me filled with cockroaches. And then he put it right in front of my face and he was like, yeah, I want you to eat this. And so he got a really strong no. And then he said, for the next 15 minutes, I just want you to kind of take this sandwich with you and continue to say no to those thoughts. And so after those 15 minutes, like, those thoughts were completely gone. And I felt completely different. So, of course, then you can start saying yes, but it's hard to start saying yes to something if you haven't fully and completely said no to something first. If those thoughts are really, are like super powerful. And a lot of the time when it's with strong states, like victim, be playing the victim, like where there's a payoff maybe, or where it's so habitual, then it can take, like a while, and we have to be very focused on first being aware that happens, because even if they have the awareness during the session, afterwards they may not have that awareness. So spend some time in awareness. And that's why I sometimes get people to do the state journaling and, what state were you in throughout the day, and when did that happen, and what happened, and what were you saying to yourself, so that people become really aware. And then I have them do the meta no.
Oh, wow. Can I have one more question? You said that saying no to the thoughts that were feeding the anxiety. So you can't just say no to the anxiety. You need to know the thoughts behind it.
Yeah, that's where it all starts. So you so it's just saying no to the quality of those thoughts. And even if it's I would say more to the thoughts or the images that feed the anxiety, because the anxiety is just a result.
Right.
And a lot of the time we do say no to the anxiety, and then the it's like we're fighting something that, then it just grows and has more power over us. It's just an emotion. Is nothing more than that. It's just sensations in your body.
Right. Okay. I see.
Yeah. And a lot of the time it's, repetitive thinking that drives the anxiety, or images. Mm-hmm. And so the way that you can do that is get something like a sandwich filled with cockroaches that you can easily say no to. So it's not like a fighting no. It's not an aggressive no. It's just a very kind of like, I choose, I get to choose. This is my life. These are my thoughts. These are my feelings. So I choose whether I let those thoughts in. And so focusing on that quality, does this serve me? No. Do I want to continue thinking this? No. Audrey?
Oh, sorry. What is a fighting no versus an aggressive no and a strong no?
Yeah, like I was trying to find the right word really for, you know, so fighting no or aggressive no are kind of the same thing. I've had clients when they wanted to say no to something, they get into like defense mode as if they have to fight the thought. And then that already implies that the thought has a lot of power and that you have to fight it and that you have to kind of be angry at it, or, you know, anger in itself is of course a no, but if you first give the thought a lot of power and then you have to fight that back with equal amount of power, it's just going to be a battle rather than if you transcend it and you step back from the thought and you can just say no. Like, you know, if someone offers me a cigarette, I can just say no. I don't have to get angry, or it's just no. Like, or if someone asks me to eat something that I don't like, I can just say no, because that's in my power and it's a very calm, neutral no. And that's the state that you want your client to be in, because if they infuse it with something else, it becomes a fight and they're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm. So something, they don't have a question about whether or not they are going to say no, but by calm, you don't mean that it's not strong.
Oh, no, it needs to be intensity of a 10 or like 9 or 10, but it can still be a very neutral no. That doesn't have to be a defensive no.
As opposed to if you were like a recovering smoker, that would be a defensive no for you.
It might be, yeah. If it still has some hold on me,
got it.
And I still feel like, oh, I don't feel any power over my no, then that becomes a problem. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
At booking.com, we can't guarantee you'll find gold.
Sorry.
Any other questions?
Yes, Femke, you said earlier that one of your clients talks a lot. So you're trying to get him from reflective to active. How exactly do you do that?
Well, first of all, I started interrupting a lot.
Okay.
And I also made him aware of that I like that he is doing that. So he's constantly rationalizing things. So
okay.
By labeling it as like, okay, now you're rationalizing, or now you're, you know, now you're seeking for answers again through thinking rather than doing the shift. And so like during the last session, I believe that was the third session that we had, you know, he was actually negating all the work that we had done by starting to think some more about it rather than just doing the exercises. And so then, you know, we see a pattern.
Yeah.
This happens a lot if you notice that someone's not doing the change work or they're not getting the results. Then you can focus on, are they in my book? Actually, I have a list of things that it could be.
Okay.
And reflection, like too much reflection is one thing. Not enough motivation or not having made the strong decision is another. So then you need to kind of like listen for those kinds of things.
Okay. Because I have a client that does opposite. She talks a lot about the content of what she's doing, but very much not into thinking about what she's doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That, yeah. So, and if someone has no reflective skills, that becomes tough.
Yes.
That's just, then you have to question whether they are coachable. I don't know, because last time we spoke about that as well.
Yes.
Have you had a session with her?
No, not yet.
Okay. No,
it'll be tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing is to make her aware of that.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to do the perceptual positioning with her.
Yeah, that might be. That might be a good thing to just kind of get her into third position and notice what she's doing. And then if you've noticed already some patterns of like when she does talk about content, does she do a lot of blaming? Does she do a lot of personalizing? Any of those patterns, if you help her step back and look at herself and hear herself, the things that she says, and you have a list of patterns. So in what you say, what are some of the things that you notice? Are you doing personalizing? Are you doing blaming? Are you doing labeling?
Yeah.
So that helps her to get into that mode.
Okay, yeah. She does a lot of mismatching.
Okay.
Yeah, but a lot of her job is problem solving. So.
Okay, so she might be able to steer away from.
Yes. Yeah.
Which are then, then you can help her to see that in some situations that's really valuable and in others it may not. So that she gets a choice of, in this context, when I'm doing my job, that's great, but it doesn't actually work for my relationship or connections with my teammates, things like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but first you need to help her see that. And that helps if you have give her a list of patterns.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Femke.
You're welcome. Okay, any other questions?
Actually, do you mind telling me a bit more about how do you do the state journaling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I just have them write down what state they're in during the day. So when they wake up and, reflect back in the afternoon, what states did they go through, every hour in their morning? And then in the afternoon, what were their states in the afternoon? So I'm not letting them do that every 15 minutes because that's just too much. But I'll have them do that for a couple of days. And when they write down the state, they need to write down, was it positive or negative? And what was the intensity of the state? So was it on a scale from 0 to 10 or to -10? Because if it's negative. And then also what triggered it? What was the situation? And was it something that someone said? Or so that someone becomes aware of their own responses to certain situations. Mm-hmm. It just creates awareness of,
Yeah, it sounds really good idea. I really like that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Going to be very helpful. Thanks.
Nice. All right, ladies. Well, if there's no more questions, then we'll wrap up the call for today. Next time we'll practice coaching session again, or a pattern, if you have a pattern that you would want to learn. I believe, let me see, because today is the 13th. So I believe that next time it's going to be back at the regular time for everyone because except for you, I think, Wyman, because I believe you guys don't shift. But in Europe, you'll shift on the weekend of the 24th, 25th. So for you, Wyman, it's going to be back to like an hour earlier.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your questions today. And I look forward to speaking with you again 2 weeks from now.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.